The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Smith Micro Software, makers of Stuff It Deluxe, designed to move files simply and securely wherever customers want them to go, for Mac and PC, online at stuffit.com. And Ask Metafilter, thousands of life's little questions answered, online at ask.metafilter.com.
Hello. I'm Justin from Austin, Texas.
I'm Matthew Workman from Medford, Oregon.
I'm Zach from Chicago, Illinois.
The Sound of Young America is produced independently and supported by listeners like you and me.
If you'd like to support the show, like I did,
just visit MaximumFun.org/donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, it's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. It's The Sound of Young America, and I'm the host of the program, Jesse Thorne. My guest is the comedian Bill Burr. Bill is the kind of comedian you might imagine when you think of that kind of hyper-masculine, aggressive comic. He's got a short buzz clip and a heavy Boston accent and a skinny, hungry-looking face, and he's ferocious on stage. But he's just as ferocious interrogating himself as he is questioning the world. Sure, Bill is against political correctness, but he's always about 3 degrees off from what you expect. Of course, if you're in a comedy club watching Bill Burr, you should expect to be surprised. Here he is essentially firing a bold shot across the bow at the very beginning of his brand new stand-up special, Let It Go, which just came out on CD and DVD.
I have been on the road for the last 5 months. I don't know, man. I just really thinking the worst of people. Really am. You see some of the animals. Some of the animals I see. Like, I was in the airport the other day, right? I'm sitting there waiting for my flight, just hating my life. And this, watching this lady, she's eating Egg McMuffins, like, plural. It just threw, like, 3 of them. Right down her throat, like a pelican. Just, like, right down her gullet. And when she was done, she wiped her face with the bag. With the bag. It's not even like a gentleman. Like, no, I'll just do the corners. And she just got a straight razor shave. She's an absolute animal. I saw this other dude. He was so out of shape. He was like trying to itch his back and he couldn't reach it. So he walked up to a support pole that was holding up an entire floor of the airport and just walks up and he just starts like rubbing up against it. Like a grizzly bear. Just a animal. Dude, I am so pro swine flu. It's like ridiculous. I want it. We need a plague. I'm telling you, we need a plague. It's gotta happen. And don't be afraid. It's only gonna kill the weak. You know? Harrison, put on a sweater. Take some vitamins. You're going to be fine. You got to let Mother Nature do her thing, man. She keeps trying to help us out, and we won't let her do it. Keeps trying to thin the herd every single time. We're like, oh, go down and get your vaccination. Why? Why? So Egg McMuffin Lady can breathe with the back fat guy, you know?
Bill Burr, welcome to The Sound of Young America. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, thank you because the last time you were on the program, it was the only interview we've ever lost the tape for.
We did like 4 hours.
I know.
It's
we
the
did
lonesome
four
dove.
Hours. And what was worse is that I had asked you to do, you had to come in costume. There's all this
the
series
thing.
Of things that I required.
I brought
required
those wood your... blocks for the horse sound.
Exactly,
we did,
yeah.
We did a radio play. That's what it was.
We did a whole radio play, and so I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming back on the show.
You know what's funny? It was when both of us are dead and gone, hopefully in more than 100 years, which mathematically is impossible, but let's just say that.
Uh-huh.
They'll mysteriously find those tapes. The digital tapes. That's the worst thing about digital was when it's gone, it's gone. Like somehow with tapes... They would lose them, but they would always be laying around.
I like the idea that that our lost interview is sort of like the gold plated record they put on Voyager, and sent to the moon.
Or to Saturn, or
dude,
wherever.
You went
Voyager
Sci-Fi Channel on me there. I don't know where you're going with that one.
You know, when they sent Voyager to space, they put a
what
gold
is Voyager?
Plated. It was one of the like 70s space missions. It was the one where they
what show though.
It was the first. No, in real life. In real life,
oh,
Bill.
No,
sometimes
I don't pay
things
attention
happen
to that.
In real life.
That actually. Wait, we had something in the 70s. I thought that was an 80s. Is that a space shuttle? I remember Challenger.
Okay. Well,
I'm going to get you, sucker. Wasn't that the name of one of the spaceships?
I think the point is that I appreciate you coming back on the program.
Can I tell you this? Once we stopped going to planets, not even planets, we went to a moon. Once we went to the moon, I'm really exposing myself that I have no business being on this radio. Once we went to the moon and there was nothing there, you know, then to just sort of do laps around the Earth, just, you know, just kind of I just lost interest.
Do you think that the astronauts that went there, even though they'd already done the research and knew that there was just going to be space rocks, do you think they were kind of bummed out when there weren't any moon men?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, sort of relieved, though.
Yeah.
Like I would, you know, maybe someone would come up out
them.
Of a hole and eat their car.
Right.
You know, but space I don't know. Car. You know, I don't understand, because there's a lot of people out there says we never landed on the moon, and people like, that's absolutely ridiculous. But my question is, I've never heard anybody say, you know, I looked through a telescope last night and I saw that little flag that we put up there.
Uh-huh.
How come you never see that? How come you never see the car?
It's a relatively small flag.
Yeah, but the level of technology, I mean, I can look at my own apartment from outer space at this point with my laptop. You're telling me that they don't, at the spy shop, they don't have that... Well, just to shut up conspiracy theorists, why don't they take a picture through that Griffith Park one they have up there?
Up in Griffith Park here in Los Angeles, the Griffith
right.
Park Observatory.
Sorry,
you think that they should dedicate that observatory specifically to just shooting that space car to shut people up about
just
the whole thing?
Just shut their faces up.
You
and then you have like Neil Armstrong hold up the photo.
Have you seen the internet video of Buzz Aldrin, a guy coming up to Buzz Aldrin saying that he never went to the moon, and then Buzz Aldrin just turns around and just cold cocks him, just takes him down. He's
That's
just like,
awesome.
I don't have to take this, and just punches. He's like 75 years old, just knocks him down to the ground with
exactly.
one punch.
Because you got to understand that guy put his life on the line to do something like that. And here's this guy, hey man, according to my Wikipedia YouTube research.
I want to ask you, you know, I was watching your new stand-up special, Let It Go. And there's a whole chunk that you do a big chunk of the special about adopting a dog.
Yes.
But that opens with the discussion of how you think it's absurd to call a rescue dog, an adopted dog, a rescue dog, because you think it should be called a free dog.
Yeah.
Because you get it from the
pound.
I think
it depends on where you are in the process. Like yesterday or 2 days ago, my girl was supposed to pick me up at the airport, and you know, I show up at baggage claim, she isn't there, and I call her, and she just goes, "We have a problem." And I hate when people do that. It's just, dude, just tell me what the problem is. Don't just say, "We have a problem," and do this dramatic pause, because then I'm thinking, what happened? You lost control of the car, you drove over a jogger, we're going to get sued, the house burned down, what happened? But she was driving, and she saw this sort of miniature pit bull, which I guess they have now, like a blue nose, running around in the street, almost getting hit. Long story short, she pulled over, coaxed the thing into the car, and then took it over to the animal hospital. And then we found a home for it. Now, my girl rescued the dog.
Right.
The dude who took the dog got a free dog.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You know?
I saw you. I saw you.
It'd be like if you pulled somebody out of a fire, okay, risk your life and all that type of stuff. You know, there was something there.
Sure.
And then I'm the guy who stands there after you guys come back, and I'm the guy who puts the blankets over both of you. And I want my hero medal.
Like,
give me a
silver
break.
Reflective blanket.
Yeah, and that's not even a good example, because there's no way in there where I put the blanket on you. Am I saving any money?
So I saw you perform this in the following context, and I was talking to my producer Julia about this. It was first of all, it was a McSweeney's benefit. It was a benefit for 826 Valencia, the literary classes for kids operation.
Slash donut shop they have
exactly.
out here, right?
So
it's all strip malls.
Everything has a theme. It was a very Dave Eggers, Venda La Vida crowd. It was a beautiful book buying and reading crowd. You were performing on a bill with a lot of comics whose tone was
was matched that. I mean, I can't recall exactly who all was on there. I think probably our friend Al Madrigal, but maybe booked the show. But it's a lot of sort of
comics who seem like
charming, quirky comics. Yes, and you followed a dog act, and you know the rule is you never want to follow animals or children. This dog act went out, and not only was it a dog act, it was called Someone or Other and His Amazing Mutts, if I remember correctly. But it was fantastic. This was the greatest dog act.
Oh, I remember that. It was
such a blast. And part
they had like hula skirts on and stuff, the dogs did.
And the premise of this whole dog act is that all of these dogs are rescue dogs, right? And they talk a little bit about that in the act while they're having them jump through hoops and... These dogs are just adorable. It's a man, his beautiful daughter. It's just a completely charming act from 1920.
Okay.
And then you come out and you open with this bit about how you don't think rescue dogs should be called rescue dogs. And it made me wonder if you're at a point in your career where you do the most difficult material in your repertoire in any given context, just to amuse yourself or test yourself.
That was probably the classic example. That you know what? I don't get to work with a lot of comedians that are my peers. Like Al Madrigal, I get to see him down at the Comedy Store, but I don't get to go out on the road and headline with them. So on a show like that, it's like a high school reunion. So I was probably in the green room, and I probably didn't see what was on. But I do remember that act. So I don't know why I did that. That could have been... somebody in the crowd annoyed me. Sometimes if somebody annoys me in the crowd or just something is said, or there's also a thing where if just something is so cute and so adorable and you have to go on after it and you have more of a harsh thing, you just have to go over the top with it. It just kind of shocks people into whatever the hell it is that you're doing. But I mean, I wasn't trying to disrespect that guy.
Your stage persona is like about the least chilled performance that could possibly exist. you're a sweet guy in real life, you know, coming over to the house, playing with my dog and everything.
It's all an act. Mispronounce my name and watch what I do to the room. Throw a temper tantrum like a 5-year-old.
Well, we might as well play this. There's this clip of you a couple of years ago performing in an Opie and Anthony stand-up comedy show in Philadelphia.
You're going to judge me on that? You're going to blame the victim?
No,
there?
I'm not going to blame the victim, but it's a truly spectacular performance in more ways than one. I mean, it's like awe-inspiring. In basically every possible way.
Can I set it up before you?
Yeah, tell me.
Defense of myself.
Please do.
What happened was we went there and it was it was like 10,000 people sort of filing in. It was right outside of Philly. These maniacs down there were wearing like Eagles jerseys and throwing a football around. They were like tailgating for a comedy show, and it was already outside. There were lawn seats for like a third of the crowd. So as far as like, you know, for a stand-up show, you got pretty much everything working against you other than the only thing that was missing is it didn't rain. So the first guy went out there, this poor bastard goes out there. And like,
this is also a self-selected audience. I mean, the Opie and Anthony audience is an audience that comes to that because they want to be, you know, they want something that's sort of like getting in their face and like pulling their strings and poking them and yelling
like
at
me,
them.
Like me, they're not big readers either. So we went out and the first guy goes out there and it was just, I mean, there might have been 2,000 people sitting down and another couple thousand sort of milling around trying to find which patch of grass they were going to sit on. So he basically gets booed off stage. Totally not his fault. It's like broad daylight. The whole thing was awful. And basically I went on 3 hours after that. And the ideal comedy show is about 90 minutes. And they started booing me. And fortunately I'd been booed before. So the first time you get booed, it's shocking. But then the next times it's not an unfamiliar sound. So you're just like, oh, this. Well, okay, if this is going to happen, I'm not going to go down by myself. I'm going to take a few of you with me. I said a lot of ignorant stuff, but I was just trying to make them as mad as they made me. And you know what amazed me was the amount of people who saw that and thought, A, that I was in a comedy club, and B, that I just walked out on stage doing that. Like, I got a lot of emails like, you know, you got some nerve. Those people came there to see a show. Where do you get up to? It's like, do you honestly think I would, why would you do something like that?
So let's hear a little bit of this, and it will be indeed a brief clip. And for the sensitive-eared, there will be some bleep profanity in this clip of...
it's going to sound like Morse code.
...of my guest Bill Burr on the stage in Philadelphia.
You fucking assholes! Fucking standing backstage for 3 hours to get booed by this GED fucking stupid ass piece of shit fucking crowd! Bunch of fucking losers! I hope your fucking radios fall on your head tomorrow! The fucking antenna goes right in your fucking ears!
In my hand already.
You fall out of one of those piece of shit buildings!
Yeah,
fuck all of you and fuck the Liberty Bell! Shove it up Ben Franklin's ass. What do you think about that? All of you motherfuckers, I hope that bridge collapses onto your pathetic lives. Go fuck yourselves. 6 minutes left, and I will be selling my CD after this shit, you motherfuckers. And the only way you get one is if I throw one at your fucking stupid heads, you bunch of racist fucking morons.
So when you're in a situation like that where you're facing a hostile crowd, and Philadelphia is legendary for its hostile crowds. I mean, they would boo Mike Schmidt off the stage of the Hall of Fame induction ceremony if they had the opportunity.
If he did one little thing wrong, absolutely they would have. I'm surprised when he cried they didn't.
If he showed up and he'd shaved his mustache, maybe?
Yeah, anything. Anything can set him off. They're like... what are those? Those killer bees. You know what I mean? You scratch your head too much, it makes them mad. And they just jump on you. It's the same thing. It's the same sort of concept. But I also don't think that it's helped that they've gotten so much coverage glorifying how they are. And now they're trying to top each other. I mean, you heard that one guy, threw up on the people in front of him.
No.
I mean, just took it to a whole nother level.
Okay.
We'll skip past that.
The question is, you're in you're looking at an audience of 10,000 very discontented people who are booing you and, you know, or at least many of
them are
booing you.
Some of the most out of shape, ugly people I've ever seen in my life. They were an absolute train wreck of a crowd. They really were. There wasn't really anything redeemable about them. And they were watching... For my money, some of the best comics in the country that night. If you saw the lineup that night, it was insane. 20 years from now, they're going to say all the comics that were on that show. And they treated them like ass. Even the ones that they didn't boo, you had to go out. There was this whole dance for me. Like they were shooting at your feet. And it was like, and that's why I went out there so angry, is because I resent. It goes beyond hatred. I resent when the crowd is in control. I literally get it. That's one of the few things that offends me. Like, how dare you?
There's two things you could have done there. One is, you know, I think oftentimes comedians measure themselves and each other by the extent to which they can, you know, they can win in a horrible situation. The extent to which you can, for example, go on stage and, you know, make fun of the idea of a rescue dog immediately after... a rescue dog act has been on stage before a crowd of the literati. And so your challenge to yourself could be like, how can I win this situation? And it seemed like what you chose was sort of like mutually assured destruction. It was like, if they're bringing out the nukes, then I'm just going to just go down each person that I can see and the place that I'm in, and just take every single thing down that I can during my time on stage.
It was a lot. It was really simple. They booed me, then I got mad, and I was just like, well, I'm not going to leave. I'm not letting these people boo me. And then I just, this simple formula was like, what do these people love? That was it. They love their moms. They love their sports teams. They love being healthy. And just, you know, they love feeling that their city matters. You know, that's the funny thing to this day. Like, you know, like when the Phillies won the World Series, I got all these emails from people going, like yelling at me. Like, yeah, now what are you going to say? It's like, dude, I don't care about the Phillies. I was just trying to make you mad. As long as it isn't the Yankees, I'm happy. I don't care. So,
You know, it was one of those. But getting back to what I understand what you I didn't understand what you were saying earlier, but yeah, that does become like stand up after a while becomes a game if in order to continue growing is you have to keep challenging yourself, and it does sometimes become how deep a hole can I dig? How ridiculous can this thing be? But you know, I saw a thing the other night. I went to Mark Maron's podcast when I was in New York. And he was interviewing David Cross, and like those guys were a couple classes ahead of me, and they were saying how David, when he started, would go up into these bars in like you know Western Massachusetts, all right, and he would go on stage as this gay character, and just would stay in it for like 10 minutes, and just like in one of the most homophobic environments possible, and he did that coming out of the gate, and to me that takes way more balls. Like, I didn't have the balls to do for, like, the first, shit, I don't know. Like, you know, my need to be liked for the first 8 years of my career was ridiculous. Like, I just unbelievably moving back and forth. Like, some of the tapes I have, I've looked at some of my old VHS tapes because I'm worried VCRs is going to die and I can't buy a new one. So I'm switching them over to DVD and I'm just watching some of my old tapes. I might have been the worst comedian you've ever seen. And also, the second I got on stage and took the mic out of the mic stand, I never stopped moving. I would just be pacing. And the movement had nothing to do with what I was saying. So it was absolutely confusing. I can't even believe I got any laughs. You know what I mean? It's like you're standing on stage, you know, and you're making some big thing and you bring your arms out like that. It makes sense. But, you know, my dad was crazy and you're just moving your arms and like flapping around like a psycho. I'd come off like pouring sweat. And there was nights when I would be bombing that I would actually, 4 minutes into my set, I would be out of breath from telling jokes. Like, that's how nervous I was. So I think through just challenging myself, because I hated being nervous because I knew I could be funny, but I wasn't being as funny as I could, that I just sort of steered the ship right into everything I was afraid of. That's when I started doing, you know, the uptown rooms that they called. I did the Apollo, and I just started doing, yeah, you know, simple formula, once again, like the Philly thing was what do these people love? And my formula with stand-up is what am I afraid of? What scares me? And then I just started, you know, getting these gigs in New York where they would be like, get on the E-train and take it out to Jamaica, Queens. It was literally the last stop. And I would get up, come up out of there, and the people who didn't think I was a cop would immediately – just the looks I got when I got, they almost wanted to turn me around and help me out and just be like, maybe they thought I was from Ireland and be like, no, Manhattan's that way. And, you know, I had some rough shows. I'm not going to lie to you. I had some really, really rough shows and some long train rides back. But because I did those, I think that's one of the reasons why that Philly thing, you know, I was able to keep my composure and somehow get out of that, you know. And then it was also one of those things. It was literally a half-court shot. Like, you know, he dragged the guy out of the audience. Eventually, it's going to go in. So it was one of those nights where everything worked.
The Sound of Young America returns triumphantly to New York City on October 22nd at the Jerome L. Green Performance Space at WNYC. Join me, Jesse Thorne, my guests, including the brilliant Amy Sedaris and more, for a night of fun and laughter and good times. And, I don't know, maybe some intellectual stimulation. We'll see. You can find more information about the show by visiting MaximumFun.org and clicking on our Live in New York City link in the right-hand bar. The Sound of Young America is proud to be a returning sponsor of the Seattle Sketch Fest in 2010. It's Seattle's premier comedy festival. It's happening October 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Theater Off Jackson in Seattle's International District. You know, when Sketchfest Seattle got started in 1999, it was the first sketch comedy festival in the country, and it's been operating continuously ever since. I've performed sketch comedy there and recorded The Sound of Young America there, and my experiences were absolutely wonderful. You'll see some of the best sketch comedy groups in the country all converging on Seattle for a festival that really is a blast. If you're a comedy fan in Seattle and you want to check it out, visit them online at sketchfest.org. That's Sketchfest Seattle 2010, October 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Theater Off Jackson in Seattle's International District. Online at sketchfest.org. Hey, Washington, D.C., want to meet up?
Teresa and I will be in our nation's capital on Thursday, October 7th for a MaximumFun.org meetup. You can join us from 5:30 to 7 p.m. for hanging out and palling around and enjoying some snacks and drinks at the Science Club in DuPont Circle. It's at 1138 19th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. You can find more information on our website at MaximumFun.org. That's the Max Fun Meetup on October 7th in our nation's capital. Invited guests include President Barack Obama. It's at the Science Club in DuPont Circle. I hope we'll see you there. It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the comedian Bill Burr. His ferocious new special is called Let It Go. It's on CD and DVD now.
No, I noticed, you know what I know I had an anger problem? It was when, just like little random things. Like, I went to this place another time. I'm on the road, and I'm ordering food, and I was done ordering the food, and the guy behind the counter asked me if I wanted a cookie, right? And all of a sudden, he had this unbelievable urge just to blast this guy right in the face. I'm not trying to be paranoid, but my brain was just sitting there going like, dude, what kind of a man asks another man if he wants a cookie? This guy thinks you're soft or something. Oh, you want a cookie? Huh? You want a cookie there, cupcake? What the know you like that. You know what the sad thing was? Was I wanted a cookie. Oh, I would have loved one. Sit there with a big glass of milk like a four-year-old. Who doesn't love a cookie? You know? But I say it. I say I want a cookie. You don't. I say it. I say I want a cookie. I bring it up. And if you bring it up, you do it subtle. You don't just yell it across the restaurant. You want a cookie, you pussy? Pussy? Pussy?
Why do you think you're so interested in making everything a challenge? I mean, every one of your setups in this special is something where you start with, often a comedian will start a bit by sort of stating something that everyone can agree on. Getting everyone on the same page, you know, does everybody remember the Kool-Aid Man? We all know that men are different than women, like whatever it is, right? It's getting everyone on the same page.
Oh yeah.
And
I wrote volumes of that stuff.
And you seem to start every one of your bits with something like this, the exact opposite. Like it's as though you took a look through your notebook and said, which of these things will upset and bother people the most? And then you went up on stage and talked about them until you found something that was funny about them.
Well, it's more, all this stuff that I say, if I'm not being ridiculous, I do believe. So that's a big thing. And I have to believe it unless I'm being absolutely ridiculous. Like I love like that style that Will Ferrell does. I wish I could do more stuff like that, but I'm more of a opinionated, like I kind of say how I feel. But there's two reasons why I do it that way. One is people are so educated to comedy, like it's constantly evolving, and like a ridiculous level of education is out there nowadays, where you got kids nowadays making YouTube videos, and then they put them up, and they literally are learning to see what plays. The thing about it, so it's more like a misdirection, like you just. You lead them to the right if you're going to the left. And in the last second, you know, because people, you know, they try to guess where you're going. So, you know, you can't put the, you know, the cart before the horse, so to speak. So it has to do that. And it's also something doing a lot of difficult rooms. It was also a way that I learned to shut people up. You know, I would just say something that would get people to be like, well, why would you say that? Where's he going with this? And that all came from doing hell rooms. But the thing is, I'm not one of those people who wants to walk people out of a club. Like, I've never understood that, why you want to make the audience leave. To me, that seems like an easy thing to do. You know, I'm going to say something you don't want to hear, but I'm going to make you want to stay.
You also undercut that a lot in your act. I mean, I think there are other comedians out there who are as aggressive as you, or as no holds barred as you, or as no topic is sacred, or et cetera, et cetera. There are other comics who have that tone, And what impresses me about your comedy is that you're also not afraid to undercut yourself in that. I mean, you have a bit. I was just listening to your podcast, and you were talking about someone complaining about your material being homophobic because it contains because your new special has sort of segment built around the idea of guys calling each other. And I suppose we'll probably bleep it for the radio, but fags.
Yeah.
And the premise of that bit is actually much more about you trying to figure out how to be a better person.
This is how it works with guys. Anytime you do anything remotely sensitive, heartwarming, anything that's going to make you more of a loving, caring individual, immediately all your guy friends suggest that maybe, just maybe, you want to suck a oh, it's brutal. Even if you do something smart, right? Like it's raining out, he's got an umbrella. What a oh my God. What are you, afraid of the water? Put your shoulders up, you Jesus Christ. Would you pull that thing out of your oh, it's brutal.
I mean, a lot of that's special. It's funny. It's basically, I think, I was in a period, I'm just examining my anger. So Let It Go kind of meant two things. It was one, when I get into a bar room debate, you know, with some plumber or whatever, right? And we're going at it. And I will so argue my point to the, just like, I just won't stop arguing my point. And a lot of times people, just to end it, will agree with me. And that's not enough for me. I'll be like, no, dude, don't just agree with me. You know, don't agree with it. And then there's always that person going, all right, Bill, just let it go. Let it go. So it was a combination of that. And then also me trying to let go of being this like, I don't want to be the angry guy. It's the exact dude. I don't want to be that person who creates tension in his house and your kids are afraid when you pull in. I mean, I want them to respect me. My hypothetical kids that I'm talking about, like they exist, you know, come home like one of those sitcom dads, you know, you're whistling a tune, you take off your Bing Crosby hat.
Put on your
isn't that the
again?
Guy you want to be?
Zip
right?
it up all the way, then zip
That's
it down halfway.
Make somebody waffles. Be that guy. That guy that, you know, lights up a room rather than everybody's like, oh, God, Frank's here. Jesus. Is he drinking? All right. I got to go.
Bill Burr, thank you so much for joining us on The Sound of Young America. Bill Burr's brand new stand-up special is called Let It Go. You can buy it on compact disc and digital versatile disc in stores now. You can find him online at BillBurr.com, and you can listen to his hilarious Bill Burr Comedy Monday Morning podcast for free in iTunes. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music and all of our music provided to us by Dan Wally. Our associate producer is Julia Smith. Nick White edits the show. Our intern is Christian Natividad. He's sitting behind me, and I think this is the last time he will ever be sitting behind me as I record the tracking for a Sound of Young America program. Bye, Christian. If you have thoughts about the show, email me at jesse@MaximumFun.org. And by all means, visit us online at MaximumFun.org. Talk about the shows in our forum. Check out our podcast. Take a look at our archives. There's all kinds of fun stuff there. I suppose that's just about it. We'll see you next time, right here on The Sound of Young America.
The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Smith Micro Software, makers of Stuff It Deluxe, designed to move files simply and securely wherever customers want them to go, for Mac and PC, online at stuffit.com. And Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com.